to a converter, we can take it to Treasure Valley and get rid of about a half a dozen people.
Okay, thank you. Good morning. Welcome to the March 20th, 2017 meeting of the House Committee on Economic Development and Trade. We have a number of really interesting matters before us today, and we're going to get started with House Bill 2012 pertaining to Eastern Oregon development, economic development. I'm going to ask Mr. Crawford to give a brief explanation of the bill and then invite forward Speaker Kotek and Representative Benz. Please come ahead right now, together with Director Chris Harder of Business Oregon, and we'll open an informational hearing now on House Bill 2012.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2012 creates the Eastern Oregon Border Economic Development Region and Eastern Oregon Border Development Board and the Eastern Oregon Border Economic Development Fund. It defines the region as including Ontario, Vail, Nyssa, having no more than 15 miles separating the northern and southern boundary and being within 20 miles of the Oregon and Idaho border. Specifies board membership duties and authorities, requires the Oregon Business Development Department to staff the board, authorizes issuance of $10 million in lottery bonds to support the fund, allows the board to award grants and loans from the fund to enhance workforce development and or economic development, declares an emergency, and is effective on passage.
Welcome.
Good morning, colleagues. For the record, Tina Kotek, State Representative, House District 44, North and Northeast Portland, and Speaker of the House. Thank you for having us here on this fabulous Monday morning to talk about House Bill 2012. Very pleased to be here with my colleague, Representative Benz, to bring you a bill that talks about how we can bring our state together and help our fellow Oregonians in the other side of the state. Last June, I had the pleasure and just it was just a fantastic opportunity to visit Representative Benz's district. Spent a lot of time in Malheur County and Baker County learning about the opportunities and challenges along the border with Idaho. And for the folks who are going to be testifying from Ontario this morning, picture this. My chief and I get off a plane. We're picked up by a lovely gentleman, an onion farmer, who takes us on the road, look at onion farms. The minute we hop off the plane, look at the development on the Idaho side, come into the Oregon side, go look at some farms, have a great lunch, go out and look at irrigation. I learned a lot about irrigation districts on my very first day. It was very – apparently, according to the news this morning, the snowpack has filled the lake for the first time in a long time. Just meeting really wonderful people from Vail and Nyssa and Ontario all the way up to Baker City to talk about the what it's like to be, you know, in a different time zone, living on the Idaho border, trying to develop economically and provide all the things that we want every community in our state to have. And not only are the people generous and full of ideas, but they also really made it clear to me that when you're competing with another state across the border that is economically booming, it makes it very difficult on the Oregon side. So that's why you have this bill today. This bill is an attempt to say, what can we do to help the communities right on that border be more competitive? How do we let those decisions be locally driven? And frankly, how do we, as a state, commit some resources there because that part of the state deserves support? And I think given the recent storms there, and I want to commend the governor's team and her staff for really responding and helping out in terms of additional emergency resources with the winter storms. But it was heartbreaking to see the onion sheds that I had visited having collapsed under the snow, to see their main street in Ontario devastated by collapsing roofs. It's hard enough out there right now. So this bill is very timely. Didn't come from that, but it certainly is going to be very helpful in supporting that community moving forward who are now reeling from a natural disaster from the storms a couple months ago. So with that, can go into more detail of the bill, but I just want to say I'm really excited about this bill, and I hope we'll earn your full support and put some money behind this bill this session. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Welcome, Representative Benz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Cliff Benz, State Representative, District 60. Thank you so much for hearing this bill, and thank you, Madam Speaker, for bringing it. And for your visit to our area, it was the first time a speaker of the House had been in my part of the world for a very, very long time. And so it was really something for her to spend 3 days there traveling about and seeing the challenges we face. Most people don't know that there's about 750,000 people right across the river in the Treasure Valley. within 43 miles of the Oregon border in the Boise, Caldwell, Nampa area. 750,000 people. When you think of Ontario, you think of a small, isolated community, but that's not the case. We have this booming area immediately across the river. It was the fourth fastest growing region in the United States over the past year or so, and it's doing really, really well. This makes it difficult for our area to compete. We have some major challenges when it comes to infrastructure, and the nature of our economy is, of course, agriculture, and so we need more value-added activity. One of the biggest issues there is transportation, because we're a long ways from any place. But it happens we're right on the railroad, and it happens that there's opportunities to drive down freight costs, and that's why we've been talking about a transload facility and things of that nature in that area, which would frankly be game-changing for that area. This bill does a couple of really good things. It creates a board, which would be kind of could be equated to a port district board. We do not have a port district. This board would serve perhaps that function. The other really good thing is it recognizes that there are regulatory standards that we find challenging when we compare ourselves to Idaho. This board would look at those and then come back and recommend to our agencies changes that perhaps would fit first with Oregon's approach to these types of laws, and secondly, that might help us better compete with Idaho's, shall I call it, lower standards. The other thing the bill does is it recognizes that there has to be some investment in that edge of the state, because frankly, you just can't gather up enough capital to put some of these big things together. It's just not going to happen. We have 31,000 people in all of Malheur County. We have about 62,000 people in the Baker County, Grant County, Harney County, and Malheur County area that would be benefited by these investments. And this we know for sure, because that would be the area, or is the area, from which Ontario and those small cities draw their life, frankly. So I very much hope that you will look upon this bill with favor, and I'm sure you're going to hear from people in Ontario today, from the Nissa Vale area, and they will better explain the importance of a piece of legislation of this nature. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Fantastic. Thank you both so much. Any questions for our two representatives here today? All right. With that, we appreciate your bringing this measure, developing it, and we will probably have the opportunity to ask more questions later. But for now, we will thank you and welcome forward Director Chris Harder and Mike McPherson of AOC. Welcome.
Chair Leininger, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Chris Harder, Director of the Oregon Business Development Department. Thank you for the opportunity to provide a few remarks on the importance of regionally focused economic development. 4.3% in 50,000, Oregon's current unemployment rate and job growth over the last year. We are top in GDP growth. Data that suggests Oregon's economy is strong. According to a recent headline in Bloomberg News, Oregon is the picture of economic health. And the article went on to state that it had the best performing economy in the nation. This is a good narrative from which to build, but it is an incomplete picture of our economic health and competitiveness. It should be no surprise that we are experiencing an uneven economic recovery. Portland, Bend, and Willamette Valley metros are growing fast, creating high-paying jobs, attracting talent, and leading on innovation. In all other areas, the state is at or below pre-recession employment levels. Rural Oregon faces continued challenges, particularly with the decline in natural resources employment. An example, Klamath County, like most other rural Oregon counties, hasn't recovered from the Great Recession. In fact, it's about 9% below pre-recession employment levels, and the Oregon Employment Department predicts it won't be out of the hole until 2024. Likewise, Ontario and Greater Eastern Oregon are reeling from damaging winter storms that have left industry at a competitive disadvantage. not to mention the ongoing challenges and opportunities of being located near the border of Idaho and the larger Boise metropolitan region. Our vision at Business Oregon is prosperity for all Oregonians. We seek to accomplish this by strategically investing in Oregon communities, businesses, and people to promote a globally competitive, diverse, and inclusive economy. At Business Oregon, we believe that if we are going to be serious about prosperity for all Oregonians, and if we are truly going to invest in Oregon communities, businesses, and people, we need to think and act regionally. Oregon is not a single homogeneous economy, but a collection of unique regions, each with their own challenges, opportunities, and resources. A one-size-fits-all approach will not work. It is this belief and approach that drove a recent reorganization of my agency to strengthen our regional economic development teams. And it is this belief and approach that leads Business Oregon to seek opportunities to invest in locally driven economic development, whether it comes in the form of our Rural Entrepreneurship Initiative or investments in rural infrastructure. Business Oregon strongly supports the governor's recommended budget and the priority her administration places on rural prosperity. And while Business Oregon has no official position on House Bill 2012, I can say that as director of the state's Economic Development Agency, I applaud Speaker Kotek, Representative Benz, and the legislature's continued desire to seek opportunities to think regionally and support rural Oregon economic development. I support the desire to find creative solutions to ensuring prosperity for all.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Welcome, Mr. MacArthur.
Good morning, Chair Leininger, members of the committee. I'm Mike MacArthur, Executive Director of the Association of Oregon Counties. We have an expression at AOC. You may have heard, if you've seen one county, you've seen one county. I think that this region we often at AOC refer to as West Idaho. It's geographically isolated from the rest of Oregon. It has its own economy, its own struggles with competition with the state of Idaho, as you heard Representative Benz describe. I think border counties in general face challenges, but none more so than this particular region because of the differences in the structure of governance in those two in our two states. I mean, Malheur County, the name Malheur itself exemplifies that distinction. It translated strictly means bad fortune. Many rural counties lack the capacity to really do economic development. I think that's what you see here. In the testimony I submitted on OLUS, I added a link to an Appalachian Regional Commission, I think has some similarities in mission, although much larger in scale than this one. I think you can look to that for ideas about how this could be successful. House Bill 2012, I think, gets at this problem, and so therefore AOC and our counties support this effort. AOC would be interested in partnering with Business Oregon and in providing staffing if this region commission's created. We think we bring some expertise to that effort. We currently staff the Oregon Coastal Zone Management Association, for instance. So we would welcome if the sponsors were interested in an amendment to add AOC as a partner with Business Oregon on this bill. So counties are really closely connected with regional solutions, regional efforts all around the state. And I think we can bring the advantage of leveraging private, other public, and philanthropic resources to this effort. So I'll try and answer any questions if you have them.
Excellent. Representative Gomberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, gentlemen. I too, congratulate Representative Benson, Speaker Kotek. I support helping our rural counties, building infrastructure, and empowering Oregon businesses. In my part of rural Oregon, the core population is aging, and the biggest problem that employers have is finding employees. In this particular part of Oregon, we've got a population base across the river where the wages are lower. Help me understand how we can structure this in a way that we're creating opportunities and jobs for Oregonians rather than opportunities and jobs for people from Idaho.
Well, Chair Leininger, Representative Gomberg, I'll take a stab at that question. I don't know if I can sit here and say I have the answer to it. I do sit here and say I can support the approach of working locally and working with that community to figure out what investments make the most sense. and what considers their kind of unique situation. I agree. Workforce, which is called out in the bill, it would be a major priority of how we both train and then provide them access to quality jobs. The exact solution to that, I think, is the partnership being proposed between the state and the local communities there.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And please don't infer that that I've got a problem with the bill. I'm just trying to make sure I understand some of these parameters.
No, I think that that's a great question. I want to note for folks who are here, and we are about to move to what will be an exciting live feed from Treasure Valley. So we'll have some community members from the directly affected community testifying by video in a few minutes. But we don't have the paperwork to move the bill definitively today. And so this is the perfect time to ask some questions because we have a little bit more time. I want to note that I think that this bill is a really great idea to help adapt some of the policies that we've been implementing in the last couple of years to the reality that you face a different set of business facts on the Idaho border than we may face, for example, in the Willamette Valley here in Oregon. And so I think this is an exciting way to address some issues that we've been talking about over the last couple of years, hopefully in a manner that is going to be productive and support economic vibrancy in your part of the state, Representative Benz. Any other questions for this panel? And if not, oh, go ahead, Representative Post, and then Representative Clem.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to bounce off of what Representative Gomberg said. As I was studying this thing over the weekend, I kept coming back and I actually talked to Representative Benz over the weekend to ask him some of these questions. So I'm not sure which of the guys might be best for this. In just thinking through this, so we have just defined a whole different part of the state by time zone, by location and everything. So literally have kind of carved out a place of the state that is a completely different existence from the rest of the state. You have Idaho to the east, which everything is less expensive. Everything. Whereas the rest of Oregon has Washington to the north, that's pretty comparable. California to the south, pretty comparable. So we have this whole other situation over there. Though, I'm with him in supporting the intention of this bill. I'm thinking if we lowered income taxes for that area, if we lowered minimum wage for that area, if we lowered everything, if we're going to carve out a special area, why not completely carve it out so that prosperity happens and it completely changes the dynamic of that area? Whereas what I'm afraid here is if I throw $10 million over there, it's just going to exacerbate the situation. It's going to go like this, and we're going to have to catch up, and it's going to go like this, we're going to have to catch up, so that eventually we need to throw $100 million. Do you see where I'm going with that? Can you help me with that?
Chair Leininger, Representative Post, I guess I would say when you invest in regions, they all are unique, and they all have their challenges, and exactly what a solution is for long-term prosperity, I think, is comprehensive and can be complex. So I guess I would say I would avoid today placing explicit prescriptions on how we move that forward. I can say I fully support an effort that looks at the region and then has the first approach of working with the local community to find what some of those solutions would be. I do think it is a process, and I do think you raise some challenges that they're facing out there.
Okay, thanks.
Representative Chair,
may I take a stab at that too?
Please,
Chair
please.
Leininger, Representative Post. So I think that's exactly what the commission is set up to do, to look at those differences, to look at where we need to make adjustments in Oregon's approach. And if that region needs a different sort of scheme in order to be able to compete, then the commission would bring back whatever changes are necessary in statute to make that happen to you folks, to make recommendations about things that could be changed. Certainly, I think there's a call for, we have a regional problem solving around land use. Mm-hmm. We've done some different things around land use in the past. I think there's possibility to do other things depending on what the region needs. And so that's what I hope comes from the commission itself. $10 million, I think, shows that we are serious about what we're going to invest here, that the state is serious about helping this region pull itself up by the bootstraps, and certainly there's a lack of capacity there, and hopefully some of that $10 million could go to help build its capacity to be able to develop itself.
Okay. I'm going to invite Speaker Kotek to respond to that question before we move on to the next question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Speaker Kotek, again, for the record. Thank you, colleagues, for your interest in the bill. A couple things, now that I've had a chance to just listen to this conversation, I want to respond. A couple things you want to focus on, I think, is the comment from Representative Bentz about how this would act a little like a port authority. One of the things that became clear when I was visiting last year was that some of this is about the infrastructure for change. There's certainly a lot of strong community leaders. They're obviously the local government, the city governments, very talented people doing a lot with very little. Initiative is an attempt to say, let's give some local ownership to economic development in a way we haven't done because of the uniqueness and the geographic isolation. I think you have to put a significant amount of money if you're serious about this. Do I think it's going to solve all this? Absolutely not. But a locally driven board, and no offense to Business Oregon, they would be advising this group, but this would be a group of local leaders given some latitude with some money to understand their immediate needs and address that accordingly. Doesn't preclude us from putting additional money in the future. I think the one thing that is hard out there is the property tax base for particularly right along the border. I think you'll have cross-border labor. I mean, I live in a border district. I got a lot of people in Vancouver working in Portland and vice versa. You know, that happens, right? But the lack of property tax base in Ontario in particular is really challenging. Whether it's a transload facility or other types of infrastructure that can be there to help build the property base, that helps support the schools. It's kind of a feedback loop that we're trying to get started. That, I think, is going to where you're going to have the ultimate impact. So I just wanted to throw that additional information out there. And I wouldn't want us to just put a board in place with no money. I want to be very clear about that. I think that would send a very poor message. But money alone is not going to solve this. This is going to be needing local innovation, understanding their needs, but with some resources to back it up.
Thank you. That's a great point.
That helps a lot.
Okay, great. And it looks like we have Representative Bentz here at the witness table also perhaps to add some context.
Thank you very much for your indulgence. I just want to mention a couple things. and I really do appreciate, Representative Post, your question. I want to make something really clear. I don't want to be Idaho, and my people don't want to be Idaho. We don't. What we want is a opportunity to compete, and given the appropriate assistance, we can. We're already competing well when it comes to, like, Oregon State University doing a wonderful job at the Extension Office and being a leader in that entire valley when it comes to the type of onions and other crop that we're doing. We're a leader when it comes to many of the school things that we do better than Idaho. We're a leader when it comes to our road systems. I don't want to say we're better than Idaho, but we have the foundation to be so. We want to be able to compete effectively. This bill helps us do that better. But I want to make it really clear, we're Oregonians, period.
Okay. Representative Clem, did you have a question?
Yeah, thank you. So let me run a scenario past you and see if this actually works with the bill. It looks to me like there's wide latitude for this Economic Development Board. So to Representative Gomberg and Post's question, let's say there were a agricultural processing facility and they came to the board and said, listen, we're thinking about moving across the way because their minimum wage is still $7.50 and ours has now gotten all the way up to $12.50 and it's just not going to work. They could go to this board and say, we would like a grant for some sort of wage assistance and we'll stay. And in that scenario, that would demonstrate to us potentially that we have to make a change in some regionalized wage policy or tax credit assistance to employers. But this looks to me like they have wide latitude to even help private businesses who are, I mean, there's local people who will know if the person is falsely threatening just to shake them down for a grant. I'm pretty confident of that. They'll know. They'll know whether the business is serious or not because they live there and they'll know the people who are running the business. But is that the kind of thing that would be possible where the worker could still get the wage, but this fund could be used to provide wage support to help them stay if that's the structural barrier that then buys them time to come to the legislature and say, hey, listen, eventually if we keep doing this, we'll run out of money, but this seems to be keeping the company here.
Madam Chair, Representative Clem, I think the bill is written in such a way to focus on great latitude, but obviously you want to make, you know, smart decisions. That might be the right decision mm-hmm. to make. Obviously, we talk about not only attracting new business, but retaining the current mm-hmm. jobs that are there. Again, getting to the property tax conversation of I think we'd need to figure out what works because I would hate to, one of our early conversations, at least in my head, was, well, maybe we need some specific property tax reductions, but the problem, then you're impacting your base again, and mm-hmm. that's not helping at all. So that's not, I think the bill would allow for that. But again, I think this would be up to the folks in the board saying, what's the best use of those dollars mm-hmm. For the long haul?
Yes, go ahead.
On a different front, the way I'm reading it, when it comes to land use, you can recommend, the board, sorry, not you, can recommend to the DLCD or LCDC that an exception or waiver be made for the purpose of furthering economic development. So this may be legislative council term exception. There's also a land use term exception, which is a whole process you go through. Do you know, for at least phase one of this, whether we mean when we say if an exception is allowed, would this board be allowed to issue exceptions or recommend to LCDC? Because to me, it seems like there should be some streamlined process. I actually, chairing land use would be in favor of allowing easier exceptions process for Eastern Oregon. There'll be some land use people who just had a heart attack. But I think the exceptions process is often referred to as something that is easy and cheap, and it's really not usually easy or cheap. And if this entity evolved maybe to be able to make recommendations for a more streamlined exceptions process, I don't think that would be a bad thing. But I don't think the bill is meant to go that far quite yet. But
Madam Chair, Representative Clem, first of all, I assume the representative are open to suggestions of changed language. One of the things that we heard when we were there were some of the land use regulations and how that things are easier on the Idaho, side for X, Y, and Z, but we didn't have enough time to actually identify what those were. Mm-hmm. The language was written in such a way to require a pathway for recommendations for DLCD to take very seriously, plus a timeline of feedback, so mm-hmm. they would have to go have a public hearing if this board said mm-hmm. we should look at this. Whether or not we wanted to go stronger, I think, would be up to the feedback from this group and from other members, but we definitely want to deal with the land use issues. They are different, and Idaho is different. I'm not saying we should wipe away everything we've done, but maybe there are specific things and that we could give a little more power to local communities.
I think that's an exciting, heartening response that this board potentially has the power to at least make recommendations to address some of those persisting issues that I've heard Representative Benz mention that you name really effectively. Both of you, both Rep. Clem and Rep. Kotek just now. Rep. Reschke has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for coming. My question is mostly to Mr. Harder, but any of you can answer. And first of all, thank you for putting Klamath in such great light when you used it as an example of being economically behind. I'm just teasing. just give me a little tongue. But you brought out a reality that Eastern Oregon isn't the only part of the state that is suffering and having trouble recovering. So I guess my question is, if this bill is brought forward because there was an underlying problem that was exacerbated by the storm of 2016 and 2017, and if this model works, would you look at other sections of Oregon that may be struggling to create a board that did something similar like this to help it recover as well?
Madam Chair, Representative Reschke, I think one of the key pieces I was trying to get across in my statements was that it is important as a state agency that we do focus regionally. In this case, I believe this is a unique opportunity to address challenges of a border community. Other regions have different opportunities and challenges. So we already attempt to work very locally with our partners there. We do have partner organizations such as Regional Solutions that help bring some of those regionally focused, certainly cross-agency solutions to the table. But I do believe this one currently is unique in the sense that it's tackling a very part of our state that is struggling, and it also happens to be a border community.
Representative Bentz, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to point out that this, right after the Speaker left our area, she reached out and suggested this bill. And that was far before the storms ever arrived, and it was based upon just what the Director just mentioned, that the unique challenges facing the eastern edge of Oregon.
I understand that this is a new project, but I think that the demonstration value of it is really intriguing. And, you know, I think that once this project gets underway, it would be an interesting and valid thing to consider, as Representative Reschke has intimated, whether there are elements that could be transferable to other parts of the state where we face some structural challenges that, because of transitions in the economy or other issues. So it's exciting both as to Eastern Oregon and the Ontario area, but I think it's also exciting in its potential as an economic development model for some parts of the state that have had challenges. So, you know, we're at the first stage, but it'll be interesting to see what happens next. Representative Post.
Well, more of almost kind of a question for you, and actually and maybe for Rep. Reschke, because in a way this border thing that we're talking about, is it your district that borders Nevada?
Let's see, Lake County, no, it represents
it. It's yours, Representative Benz?
Yeah.
Okay, because I know we do have that border as well.
Right.
That a lot of people forget
about. We're
close. Yeah.
It's an interesting idea. I see that Rep. Rocksmith has a question.
Well, more of a comment. I just appreciate the work that's being done. I also appreciate the suggestion from, as a former county commissioner and chair as a former county commissioner of AOC's involvement and a possible amendment of such for the bill. It's up to the, of course, Speaker and Representative Bentz. But in working with, as a border district as well with California, we have almost the opposite problem where we have a lot of our workers go to California to work, especially to Pelican Bay Prison. Just over the border, and then all of the Californians come up to shop in our district because to avoid the 7.5% sales tax, but we're still 6.4% below mean zero pre-recession recovery in the district. And I appreciate Mr. Cummings' comments with regards to the lack of natural resource work in our region. This is a great start. I appreciate the comments from Representative Clem and the land use issues. We need to look at that, not just maybe in this region, but across rural Oregon, because there is a disparity, as we all know. But I would be interested, if it's up to the Speaker and Representative Bentz, with regards to the amendment partnering with the Association of Oregon Counties. And I appreciate all the work that's been done here.
Madam Chair, just briefly, because I don't think all of you have been out there recently. I have to say I was really struck by when I visited. While Ontario is rural, it is not a rural area when you are literally just across the border from a really nice airport, lots of development. I mean, I wish I had been there. It had been 20 years since I had been out there. I was shocked by the development in the southwest Idaho side. This is not a rural community anymore. And there are issues, whether it's Klamath or down in Curry, but it's really difficult for this community to compete when you are essentially sitting on the other side of their version of Portland. And so that's why I think this is a bit unique. It could have some instructive, pilot opportunities for. But again, I think this is just probably the only place in the state that has this situation, honestly, given the economic versus the Tri-City areas where I think you have a lot more economic boom on the Oregon side. You definitely don't have that happening on the Idaho side.
Interesting. All right. Well, great. Well, I know that we have a number of people who are going to be testifying from via video feed, so we'll move forward with that. Thank you all for being here and offering those insights. And I guess I am now officially asking that welcome witnesses from Treasure Valley. We're so happy that you could be here with us for the House Committee on Economic Development and Trade. Welcome today. We would like to have
Chair Leidinger.
I'm going to just jump in and help make sure you know what the rules are that we're trying to, or the protocol we need to follow. Please begin in any order and start by stating your name for the record, and then let us know what you'd like to share.
Okay. Chair Leidinger, members of the committee, Madam Speaker, Representative Vince. For the record, my name is Dan Joyce, Malheur County Judge. Thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of House Bill 2012. However, I would be remiss if I did not take a moment to thank House Speaker Tina Kotek and Representative Vince for bringing this bill forward. I would also like to thank Speaker Kotek for taking the time during the interim to personally visit Malheur County. None of us can remember Malheur County ever receiving a visit from the Speaker or a Speaker, so her presence meant a lot to everyone here. I would like to begin my remarks by first sharing why we feel this legislation is needed. To those who have not visited Malheur County, we are located on the Oregon-Idaho border. Our communities are separated from those in Idaho by the width of the Snake River. For years, we have struggled with the challenges this geographic location presents. However, recently, those challenges have become more difficult with policy decisions made at both the state and federal levels. These decisions have created an economic and often social disparity between our communities from across the river. As a result, we have seen an increase in companies moving less than 1 mile across the river to Idaho. As a county judge, I must tell you that this is heartbreaking to see. These individuals grew up here, have kids in our school system, sponsor local events and programs for the betterment of the area. They care about our communities. However, they often feel our voices are not heard over political and social organizations from the Valley. In addition, Malheur County often sees a significant percentage of unemployed individuals move to our side of the border due to larger incomes that can be obtained from unemployment and social safety net programs in Oregon in comparison to Idaho. This helps contribute to Malheur County's poverty levels being the highest in the state. While we are welcoming and compassionate, the unproportionate balance of unemployed individuals moving in and business moving out creates a difficult fiscal and social situation, which has rippling effects through our education, judicial, and community services. Oregonians are, okay. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you, that was great.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Madam Speaker, and Representative Vince. Good morning, my name is Kit Kamel. I'm with the Snake River Economic Development Alliance, and I'm grateful for this opportunity to speak to you on the positive impacts that House Bill 2012 will have for Oregon and Malheur County. House Bill 2012 has the unique potential to lift Malheur County up to meet the business opportunities that are currently knocking at our door. Our organization covers 3 counties and 2 states, Malheur County in Oregon and 2 counties in Idaho. Our primary focus is to market the region, encouraging new business investments and more living wage jobs. It is extremely important that the existing businesses in Malheur County are financially healthy and stable. A company will not generally consider an expansion in a community with a poor economy. Likewise, a new company looking to relocate or expand its geographic location will not consider a community with struggling businesses. House Bill 2012 allows Oregon to creatively address our economically repressed county that is part of the Idaho Commerce and Trade Area in the Western Treasure Valley. Without House Bill 2012, Malheur County is unable to compete in their own area. Infrastructure, workforce development, industrial land capacity, and other key components are needed to enhance and grow the economic stability of the county, thereby making Oregon's economy stronger. Our organization fully supports House Bill 2012. Thank you for your time and consideration of this bill and for all you do for small business and rural communities in Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Chair Leininger, members of the committee, Speaker Kotek, and Representative Bentz. My name is Grant Kitamura of Ontario, Oregon. I have an onion packing and shipping business here in Ontario named Murakami Produce Company. I'm here in support of Bill 2012, and thank you for the sponsorship by Speaker Kotek and Representative Bentz. The establishment of a development region here in Oregon would help us create and fund a more even playing field with Idaho. As Speaker Bentz mentioned, Representative Bentz and Speaker Kotek mentioned, Idaho is booming. And I was born and raised here, and I've been in business for 40 years here. And in the last 20 years, there's just a big disparity between what's going on east of us across the river and what we can do here. The major snowstorms we suffered this winter were a factor. I mean, but this is also an example of what's going on. There were hundreds of buildings destroyed or damaged in the heavy snowstorms of January. Many people are taking their insurance proceeds from Malheur County buildings and rebuilding in Idaho, thus losing jobs and businesses. We need to help prevent the loss of more businesses and jobs, and we need to help create ways to attract businesses. A border economic development region will help us work with the state and local agencies, hopefully enhancing our region to better compete with Idaho. I feel, for example, the social safety nets compete with my business when we need seasonal employees at harvest time, and hopefully we can change that. Now, this bimodal system we need as business. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I understand we have one more panel of witnesses, so welcome. Hi. Thank you, and please begin in
Chair Leininger, members of the committee, Madam Speaker, and Representative Bentz, thank you for this opportunity. My name is Nicole Albisu, and I'm the superintendent for Ontario School District, and I'm here in support of House Bill 2012. I first of all would like to thank Madam Speaker and Representative Bentz for sponsoring this bill. Your belief and investment in our community is truly commended. Having spent the last 18 years in Ontario, I understand the unique challenges that our community, particularly the students and their families, face. This bill has the potential to change the lives of our students and their families forever. 4 years ago, the three largest school districts came together and with very little money and even fewer resources, we recognized how important having career technical educational opportunities was for our students and this community. So these types of programs provided opportunities to our youth who often have trouble envisioning their own future. So through Poverty to Prosperity and Treasure Valley Tech, not only have we kept kids engaged in school, but they have been given choices they may otherwise not have had. Not only are they graduating high school, but now they can continue on with technical training or even college after high school, where they can go directly into the workforce. In the past 5 years, Ontario School District has increased its graduation rates from 52 to 81%. Our county graduation rates have improved by 22%. These CTE career pathway programs have contributed to this greatly. I'm not going to lie, the journey hasn't been easy. Each year, with fingers crossed and wishes made, we hope to have secured another grant or funding opportunity to sustain these programs for yet another year. And of course, each year we hope to have adequate funding and resources to expand on these programs. This bill could easily support an organizational structure that is more stable and sustainable. I want to thank you again for this opportunity to speak. Although this bill supports the economic health and recovery of our region in many ways, I hope you see it through the lens of a young person. This is really an investment in them. It helps to provide rigorous and relevant career pathways and engage students in planning for their future.
And that type of investment has no limit to the success. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for allowing my testimony. For the record, my name is Ron Verini. I'm Mayor of Ontario. I also want to thank Madam Speaker for bringing this bill and also for visiting Ontario. For that visit itself healed many of the divides of our state and has brought us more together as a team. This bill has some great ideas and will be extremely beneficial and a tremendous value to the city of Ontario. Inside this bill, the commission is set up to identify and to help address those issues that Oregon faces in competition with Idaho, thus making us more competitive. Also, Madam Speaker, I want to thank you for putting teeth into this bill. With the scarce availability of funds, the $10 million from the lottery fund is really an answer to a prayer. I do not think for a moment that this is a slam dunk, but trust that your trip over here opened enough eyes to understand the unique challenges with our location next to Idaho. With that said, HB 2012 will give us a more level playing field with Idaho. We have a project called Project Violet that we're working on right now. It is going to give us an opportunity to provide 200 to 500 higher paying, high tech manufacturing jobs. This is a project that Ontario is working on right now. But providing the services are the block. And hopefully HB 2012 will go a long way to close this deal. Thank you for your time. Let's just get her done.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We appreciate your input. Welcome. Please go ahead.
Madam Speaker, excuse me, I'll start again. Chair Leninger, members of the committee, Madam Speaker, and Representative Bentz. My name's Paul Skeen. I'm from NYSA. I have testimony that I will send in to you, but I'm going to talk from the heart right now, and I wasn't planning on it. This is a breath of fresh air. We have gone from feeling like we were the ugly stepchild in the Cinderella story to, well, actually, maybe there's a shoe that's going to fit. This is huge. You need to understand that every time somebody, and they've all talked about it, every time somebody moves to Idaho, it puts more burden on all the rest of us carrying the tax load here. So having this, have a level playing field is huge. I'm the president of the Onion Growers Association here. Mahaffey County is the largest onion growing county in the United States. We live and die by this in this valley. And the level playing field will make a huge difference. The transload facility that we've been talking about, I get so excited about because I think there's so much opportunity that we have to really build a great port here that will help us for years to come with good paying jobs. I think that it's unbelievable that people have started to pay attention to us a little bit over here. We're in a different time zone. We're actually, there's three states that we're closer to the capital than we are here. You can do your homework and figure it out. And I just think it's important that we get this bill passed. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
My understanding
is that's all the witnesses. Okay,
we have two more.
And folks here in this room, we have a number of additional bills that we're looking at today. So then we're going to move quickly on to some of our next issues. Welcome, gentlemen. Please state your name for the record and let us know what you're thinking about.
Good morning. Thank you. Good morning, Chair Leninger, members of the committee, Madam Speaker, and Representative Bentz. My name is Lynn Finley. I'm the city manager for the city of NYSA and the interim city manager for NYSA and the city manager for the city of Vail. I'm here to fully support and encourage adoption of House Bill 2012. I would really like to thank Speaker Kotek for a visit to Malheur County last summer. This bill reflects her understanding of our situation and it shows her concern. The establishment of the Eastern Oregon Border Economic Development Region will greatly assist our communities in workforce development and economic growth. For years, we have worked to improve our communities with workforce development through career technical education, updating our comprehensive plans, identifying tracts of industrial land, and aggressively expanding our enterprise zones to better compete with our neighbors across the river, and yet we still lag in growth by double digits, and we continue to lose businesses that are relocating across the river. The establishment of this organization will greatly aid our efforts in the three cities and county we've been actively engaged in for several years. Other than high school sports, we no longer compete with each other, and we work hard to actively assist each other in development issues. This bill takes these efforts to a new and exciting level. The bill, in conjunction with the transportation hub, will ensure we have a trained and available workforce. Specific advantages will help us as economic development leading to private investment, job creation and retention, expansion of the transportation infrastructure, support for the transload facility, workforce development, infrastructure expansion into regionally significant industrial sites, and local oversight and develop of a development board and the ability to recommend exceptions or waivers to the DLDC on land use barriers. These opportunities would make us much more competitive. And I really appreciate the opportunity to testify for you today. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
Chair Leninger and members of the committee, I'm Bill Johnson. I'm a founding member of Malheur County Poverty to Prosperity, and I also serve as a trustee at Eastern Oregon University. Thanks for taking an hour with us this morning. Let me ask you a rhetorical question. Do you value diversity? I'm sure the answer is yes. And I'm sure you realize diversity is not limited to things just like the kind of music you listen to. You know, here in Malheur County, we like both kinds, country and Western. You've heard today about how a failure of diversity in statewide policies and regulations has led to border differences that have caught us here in a vicious cycle for 40 years. A cycle that's led to poverty. The poverty's led to poor education outcomes. It's led to bad personal health and lifestyle choices. That leads to a lack of community engagement and leadership, and then that leads back to more poverty. And we believe House Bill 2012 can help us, but it's only going to succeed if we can develop quality governance within our local commission. And you need to understand that here we've learned how to organize ourselves over the past, I'm going to say, 5 years. You heard some examples this morning. Superintendent Obisu is speaking about Treasure Valley Tech, for instance. It's hard to tell over video telelink, but within this room this morning is a core of leadership in our community that can make a difference. We're ready, and we can manage this opportunity. So I ask you, please, please support our diversity by supporting House Bill 2012. You see, Oregon, it's a big state composed of many small places. And so we're asking for your help in this strange little part of Oregon to make it the place that it should be. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much. Well, that was wonderful. That was a really helpful session. We're gonna leave the panel in Treasure Valley now. And thank you very much for that good input. We're gonna close the public hearing on House Bill 2012, and I think I'm hearing a lot of excitement about returning to the bill when we are ready with paperwork to move it forward to Ways and Means. It would move forward for funding, so there will be more conversations about exactly the next steps, but this was an exciting introduction. Thank you. All right, so now, folks in the room, we have several things left to do today, and I want to flag for you where we're trying to get to because we only have about 50 minutes left. There are some bills that are not ready to move today that we'll be carrying forward. One of those is House Bill 2242. But we have a couple of work sessions, and then we're going to move into a public hearing on a new markets tax credit bill, for which we have quite a number of people signed up to testify. So my hope is that we can move quickly through the two work sessions. Mr. Crawford, if you could please describe for us House Bill 2752. I'm going to open a public hearing and work session on that bill and ask you
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2752, the committee is being asked to consider the Dash 1 amendments. The Dash 1 amendments replace the measure. They make legislative findings related to cross-laminated timber, directs the Oregon Business Development Department to develop and administer a program to issue grants to projects for the construction of all-wood high-rise buildings in the state. They specifies prioritized grant application attributes, and they allocate $2 million to Business Oregon to be distributed to eligible products.
So what we would be doing today is potentially endorsing, by passing this bill through committee, the idea of an investment in this project, and the bill would be subsequently referred to the Joint Ways and Means Committee, where a decision would be made about the availability of funding. And we have one witness signed up to testify in support today. This is Mr. Len Bergstein. Please come forward. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Leininger and members of the committee. My name is Len Bergstein. I'm here appearing on behalf of the Framework Project, which you spent some time with in your last committee hearing, in support of the redraft, the Dash 1 version of 2752. Framework project fits very nicely into the today's theme, and also with the narrative of this committee, that the best kind of economic development is the kind that really joins urban and rural prosperity together, and also public and private partnerships. That's really what Framework Project is all about, as you heard at your last hearing. Since we met last, your activity has really spurred a tremendous amount of energy in this project. Let me just mention three things. First of all, we met with the City of Portland. Mayor Wheeler has told his bureaus that he's looking to find the money that will help provide their part of the gap financing for this project. So out of the $32 million of private equity, there's going to be $9 million will be coming from the city, we hope, and we've been meeting directly with his bureaus at his direction in his office to make that happen. Number two, we've been meeting with charitable trusts, really at your suggestion, Chair, that we go and make sure that this is a syndicated effort between public and private organizations. So several charitable organizations have also been involved to help find the gap in the financing stack. And third, state agencies have been harnessed really with the energy that you've provided in that committee hearing, and agencies like Biz Oregon. Obviously, they're having a summit next week, and that there'll be a high degree of prominence to this project. Oregon will be in the epicenter of the really national and international focus of this new emerging industry, and also the Building Codes Division is working vigorously to make sure that all the permitting is done, so that in fact this passes all the tests and is in fact a real demonstration project about how to make this work. So with your help, this project has really been launched. You were really the kind of second stage rocket here to make this thing move, and we're hoping that this bill will continue that momentum.
Wonderful. Thank you. So the Dash 1 amendment is the amendment that would give voice to the proposal that we heard in support of the Framework Project from our public hearing on the Framework Project. And with that, I would welcome a motion.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I move that to adopt the Dash 1 amendment dated March 14, 2017.
Vice Chair Brock-Smith moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 2752. It's dated March 14, 2017. Is there any discussion? Is there any objections? Seeing none, the amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Chair.
And then we'll have a motion on the bill as amended.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2752 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Vice Chair Brock-Smith moves House Bill 2752 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, the motion carries. And we do not need to vote on that on the floor because it goes straight to Ways and Means. Is that right? Okay, so congratulations to those the developers of that project. That's an exciting effort. We're closing the work session and hearing on House Bill 2752 and moving forward opening a public hearing and work session on House Bill 2904, Rural Enterprise Zone Facilities.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2904 allows an alternate eligibility certification method for rural enterprise zone facilities in counties outside of all metropolitan statistical areas. Takes effect on the 91st day after sine die.
Welcome. And this is a bill from Representative Greg Smith, and I believe that we have a colleague of his here to describe the bill today.
Yes. Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Philip Shores with Representative Greg Smith's office, and I apologize. He was feeling sick a little bit this morning. He's trying to get over that before he brings it to the floor with you guys. So House Bill 2904 is a simple one-and-a-half-page bill dealing with long-term enterprise zones. Part of Representative Smith's district, which is District 57, includes multiple ports, which have been very successful in recruiting business using the long-term enterprise zone program. Part of the district, however, is scheduled to become eligible for this program starting next year. So this bill just simply clarifies or simplifies the process for a enterprise zone to still remain considered long-term. And when I say that, it's a standard enterprise zone, and if they have certain criteria or if the counties have meet certain economic triggers, can be considered long-term, which allows them to extend property tax abatements instead of the standard 3 to 5 years from 7 to 15. And so that has been very encourageable to businesses locating at ports where it's larger investments. It's scheduled specifically, this is to affect the Port of Morrow and the Port of The Dalles, Wasco County and Morrow County. This bill is very simple in the sense of, instead of going off of economic triggers, it just says if you are a rural county in Oregon, your enterprise zone is considered a long-term rural enterprise zone instead of going off of multiple triggers. So that's what the one-and-a-half-page bill does. Any questions if you'd like.
So. Thank you so much. Welcome. Please
Thank
state
you
your
very
name for the record.
My name is Lisa Middlesdorf, and I'm the Director of Economic Development at the Port of Morrow. Thank you for hearing us today. I've been at the port for 30 years. I've seen a lot of changes in development. The Enterprise Zone program has been very important to the success and continued growth at the Port of Morrow. I just want to talk a little bit about the changes to this bill. It would keep Morrow County in, but it would make every rural county eligible for a continual period of time. That will help just keep rural counties more competitive in Oregon. The Port of Morrow is a co-sponsor of the Columbia River Enterprise Zone. We've been a member of that board for several years. I serve as an alternate board member, making decisions with that board. The port's missions are to increase jobs, increase assessed values, increase wages, and create a better quality of life for our citizens. The Enterprise Zone program helps us fulfill that mission. Losing the ability to be on the long-term rural enterprise zone list would be devastating to Morrow County. The port has been very successful. I'm sure some of you know that. We're just getting started. We need to continue our mission to create a better quality of life for the people that live there. One problem with the long-term rural enterprise zone in the past was wage levels. We have large construction projects in our county, as does Wasco County and Sherman County, that do skew the employment per capita income levels. And enterprise zone rules have a criteria that are based on that per capita income level. So we have a large number of 800 to 1,000 construction workers coming into our county, and then they qualify as per capita income there. They don't live there. They don't contribute past the short window that they are there, but it does create a problem with us qualifying for this program. We're creating a significant workforce training program. I enjoyed the last panel that we listened to. We have very similar issues. We are a border community to the Tri-Cities area. We tend to find our workforce is living there and coming into our region. The Enterprise Zone program has created a way for us to create some programs in our community that develop workforce training, housing. We're just starting on a great housing program. We're giving a $5,000 incentive to everyone to buy a house in Morrow County, and hoping that our workers that are traveling in from other areas will decide that they want to be a member of our community. So we're trying to find ways that we can increase the livability in the county. This program does that. We've been working with local businesses on the CTE program, on workforce training. So we're really trying to grow our own there, but we need the success of the Enterprise Zone to help us do that. We're able to offer programs that will enhance our quality of life and increase housing development, small business incentives, public safety, education, and community enhancements. Please support this bill.
Thank you so much. Thanks for being here to testify, and thanks for that helpful input. Any questions for this panel? All right, I would welcome a motion on House Bill 2904.
Chair Leininger, I move House Bill 2904 to the floor with a do pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to House Committee on Revenue by prior reference.
Vice Chair Brocksmith moves House Bill 2904 to the floor with a do pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the House Committee on Revenue by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, the motion carries, and the bill is moving forward. And with that, we're going to close the public hearing and work session on House Bill 2904 and wish Representative Smith a quick recovery and thank him for not bringing his germs to the legislative body right now. Nice job. All right, now we're going to move forward with another significant part of our work for today's meeting. That is, we're going to be opening a public hearing on House Bill 2155 related to new markets tax credits. I'm going to invite Mr. Craig Campbell forward, and Adam Crawford, if you could please give us a quick summary of the bill before Mr. Campbell provides us with more information.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the House Bill 2155, the committee is being asked to consider the Dash 1 amendments. The Dash 1 amendments replace the measure. They extend the sunset for the tax credit for qualified equity investment to January 1st, 2023, increases the maximum amount of qualified equity investments that the Oregon Business Development Department may certify per year, per tax year, from $16 million to $24 million, caps fees paid to qualified community development entities at 3% of the qualified equity investment, removes provisions relating to bioscience incubator, and takes effect on the 91st day following sine die.
Excellent. And after we hear the introduction from Mr. Campbell, we're going to invite forward Martha McLennan and Robin Boyce of the housing, those two people who are with some housing organizations. Mr. Campbell, welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much. Good morning. House Bill 2155 with the Dash 1 amendments continues a new allocation of a program that was created in Oregon in 2011. It creates a matching tax.
Can you please identify yourself for the record?
Oh, did I not do so? My name is Craig Campbell. I'm here on behalf of the Coalition for Capital. Doing this long, I would have thought that I would have remembered to have done that. So thank
your
you
shirt said a lot, but you didn't say it.
It's a beautiful shirt, by the way.
Thank you. It may have something to do with the first day of spring or something about a duck game. Anyway, the matching tax credit in Oregon called the Low-Income Community Jobs Initiative was created in 2011, and through the process of that initiative has created $200 million in investments in businesses in Oregon throughout the state. The bill before you with the Dash 1 amendments creates a new allocation with $300 million of investments. Those investments have attached to them a 39% tax credit, which takes effect in the last 5 years of a seven-year investment spread over that period of time. That's why you see that $24 million cap on the tax credits. So it will bring in $300 million in investments in Oregon businesses, much like the last one did, $200 million. It also attracts federal dollars. Now, the federal new markets tax credit dollars can be invested anywhere in the United States. And what we found is there just weren't a lot of investments coming from the federal level here in Oregon. So we created this matching tax credit, and that, in fact, has attracted investments from the federal new markets tax credit. So it's done its job very well. Over the weekend and on Friday, you should have received from me some nice documents that showed the nice spread of where those investments have been. We've had a unique experience in Oregon. Usually the spread in investments is about 80% urban, 20% rural. In Oregon, it's been closer to 60-40, 60% urban, 40% rural. And in addition to that, we've also seen a much larger percentage of those investments in nonprofit companies. So far, it's created investments in 35 different companies over 30 different communities. And then the numbers I'm using, you can see, I sent you a link to the transparency website, and we cite to those numbers when we talk about the jobs that were created. It created 982 jobs as a projection, and then did this 1,150 retained jobs, and we're expecting that it will do better than that this next time around, as we're doing a couple of things. One, we're putting a cap on the amount of fees that can be charged by those who put together the project. Our goal is to try and make sure that those investments are made. We don't want anyone getting particularly rich off that process, but we do need to pay them for what they do, so that does limit that. The other thing we're doing is we found that the $8 million cap was difficult for folks to put together packages for a $10 million or an $8 million limit, so we're increasing that to $10 million to make those business jobs a little easier to put together. I'd be happy to take any of the very difficult questions so I can quickly refer those to people who will be testifying after me who actually have knowledge in more detail about this. But I think that covers what the program does. We will be having another amendment that will be coming that allows Oregon to link to a federal investment that can be made in low-income community housing. Oregon doesn't allow you to invest in structures for rental, so we're making a specific exception for Oregon for affordable housing. So that will be coming down the pike in the next couple of days, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Representative Post.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know it's in that email you sent us, but I thought just in light of the conversation we've had today about Ontario and all the other things, could you maybe just give me one or two examples of what you talked about early on, of maybe some specifics where you've seen this great growth?
Madam Chair, Representative Post, actually, there's a great example out in Eastern Oregon in the Ontario area. It's Fry Foods. And there's somebody who actually worked on the Fry Foods project who's going to be talking about it in a little bit. But essentially, Fry Foods went out of business. They had to, the New Markets Tax Credit was able to come in to restore that business and create 82 jobs out in that area, which, as you might guess, is a huge impact to an area that was already having some rather tremendous difficulties during the recession. There's a whole list of different ones I could cite to, but
right.
The folks who are going to be coming up and talking to you, okay. Some of them will be talking about specific programs, okay. And others who were involved in putting them together. But Fry Foods is a great example.
Thank you.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Campbell. I think it's exciting as you go to take your seat. Go ahead and take your seat. I think it's exciting that there's been an adjustment to make sure we limit transaction costs in the use of this tool. I like that it spurs economic opportunity, job creation through adding to construction activity, even as we fund important community facilities, including affordable housing-related projects. So with that, welcome Martha McLennan and Robin Boyce, two really accomplished professionals in the affordable housing development and operations space for nonprofit organizations. Please let us know what you think about this bill.
Good morning. Chair Leininger, members of the committee, my name is Martha McLennan. I'm the Executive Director of Northwest Housing Alternatives. We are a nonprofit provider of affordable housing across Oregon. We have more than 1,800 units in 15 Oregon counties. And in Clackamas County, we're also a homeless service provider. I'm here today to speak in favor of this bill. I wanted to actually speak a little bit more about the issue of how this bill and this program can serve community facilities. As I looked over the number of projects that have been funded in the past through this program, there are many different kinds of community facilities that are served and many different organizations who have benefited from the program. They include Neighborhood House, who is also a homeless service provider and community action program, Salvation Army, St. Vincent de Paul of Lane County, the Oregon Child Development Coalition, Albina Head Start, Ride Connection, and Shelter care. So one of the things that you may not be thinking about so much in this committee is how these programs can benefit a wide variety of different entrepreneurial efforts that are being pursued, including those that are community facilities serving your communities. At Northwest Housing Alternatives, we're working on a project right now that is looking at the federal new market tax credit program and could also benefit from this program. It is a campus redevelopment of our headquarters in Milwaukee. It will include three components. One is an affordable housing project, 28 units, serving families, with some of those families coming from homelessness. It will help us to expand our homeless shelter. So we serve families who are experiencing homelessness. We'll be able to do a 60% expansion of that program. And then it gives us a new operations center, which will help all of our social service programming, both in Clackamas County and across the state. One of the things that we're particularly proud of doing there is eviction prevention and rapid rehousing. We serve over 200 households a year in Clackamas County in that program. Right now, our office spaces are so constrained that we literally cannot do an all-staff meeting, a board meeting, training for our staff. So this will give us a new facility that can expand our capacity. Right now we have 38 employees. This will give us the capacity to go to 55 employees. So again, while you don't often think of community facilities as providing jobs, this gives us the that expansion capacity. So with that, I would endorse this and hope that you support the New Market Tax Credit Program.
Thank you. Ms. Boyce.
Hello, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Robin Boyce. I recently retired from being the executive director of the Housing Development Center. We're a nonprofit development organization located in Portland, but we work statewide. We work on both affordable housing and community facilities, and I'm here more to discuss the community facility development work we do. We've done about $800 million of development over our 23 years, and that includes over 300,000 square feet of community facilities. The new market programs have been very crucial to our new market, to our facilities development, and I wanted to talk about that from the point of view of job creation. I know a lot of times we equate job creation with for-profit industries, but the new market program has been really crucial in terms of expanding the number of professional and quality jobs in the nonprofit sector as well. Currently, we're working on two mental health and primary health care facilities in Portland that are using the federal New Markets program. We're also working on a community center in East Portland in a low-income area with the PANO, the Asian and Pacific Islander Network of Oregon. Both of these are examples of projects that could have or would be able to use the New Markets program to expand their number of jobs and the number of people they serve. The New Market program is especially important because it invests in the areas where it will do the most good, in low-income communities. So that means high poverty rates or areas where the median income of that census tract is lower than the surrounding areas. In developing a new business, whether it's for-profit or nonprofit, in a low-income community, you have to overcome some hurdles that you don't see in the rest. Your rents are lower, so you can support less debt. Your appraisals come in lower, so you have a harder time borrowing. These are just economic factors that affect all development in those areas. Bringing in the equity from new markets is a crucial part to be able to leverage and make projects actually happen. I wanted to give an example. In the two health clinics that we are currently working on, one of which is a Garlington Center in Northeast Portland, one of which is the Asian Health and Service Center in the Lentz neighborhood in Southeast Portland, we are bringing in approximately $9 million of federal tax credits. And I've spent the last year and a half marketing to attract those tax credits. We heard over and over, if you had a state program, we would be much more interested in bringing our credits and our investments to Oregon. I can't tell you how many times I heard that over the six different conferences we went to. A few things that these projects will do: 12.6 quality construction jobs for every $1 million of project costs. Quality permanent jobs. So in the Asian Health and Service Center project we're working on, we're bringing 46 projects 46 jobs, professional jobs, to that low-income neighborhood, and we're expecting to add another 32 healthcare jobs in that neighborhood. And finally, community benefits. You heard about Ride Connection, who used this program in 2013-14. We were the developers on that project. They provide rides and transit education for seniors and people with disabilities. Before their center, they provided 360,000 rides per year. After their center, they've raised that within 2 years to 500,000. So you can see a little bit of an example of what happens when they're able to bring that investment in, reduce the amount of debt payments they have, put those dollars into new jobs, new staff that can then add more community benefits. Thank you very much for allowing me to testify and support this.
Excellent. Thank you. Any questions for this panel? I would like to note just before you go sit down that, you know, this legislative session, we're looking at a whole range of ways to support access to affordable housing. And one of the ways to support access to affordable housing that also supports creation of good jobs is to develop more supply of affordable housing. And the fact that this tool, the New Markets Tax Credit tool, is one of the funding streams that can help us build projects that have both affordable housing units and the needed community facilities that help, you know, very, very low-income families have their needs met as they stay in permanent affordable housing, makes it quite an attractive tool. It increases supply by bringing in money to develop these, to build these projects that we might not otherwise have access to, including federal money that we wouldn't otherwise be able to bring into these projects. So I think it's a pretty interesting approach to the access to affordable housing issue. It creates supply, it creates construction jobs, and it brings in other people's money that would otherwise not be coming in to support construction projects like these. So thanks for that perspective. And now we will invite forward Eric Davis and Tony Hill. Next, we're going to have Jody Weiser and Mariah Kelly. Marsha Kelly. We try to alternate proponents and opponents of things. And then after that, we'll have Dave Alterman and Reynold Reeder come forward, please. Welcome. Please begin in either order, state for your name for the record, and let us know your perspective.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Eric Davis. I'm the CFO of C2F, Inc. in Beaverton. We're a distributor of fine arts materials, and we're a family business. We're a second-generation family company, and we're trying to transition over to the third generation. My experience is just about this program. I'm an Oregon licensed CPA. I've worked with many family businesses over the term of my career. And I started working for C2F in June of 2014. When I started with the company, I ran into a situation where my predecessor said, this company is going to fail unless you do something. And the facility was falling apart. And I just determined there had to be some way to be able to save our company. Our facility was in extremely poor condition. We had been in, our employment had been in decline for more than 10 years. We had had several situations where we had had electrical fires in our facility and other problems in our facility. And there was, it was simply a situation where I was going to have to find some resources, some way to be able to make improvements to keep our business going. We lacked the ability to finance. We could not get capital from banks or other institutions to finance improvements at our project. So when the New Markets Program, when I found it, I started making calls, and it was a way that we could actually get lenders to come in and provide the capital that we needed to make the improvements. We also lacked the working capital internally to be able to do this. So with this program, we've been able to replace our leaking roof. We were able to install heating and cooling units for the first time. Believe it or not, our facility was neither heated or cooled, so it would get extremely hot in the summer and very cold in the winter. We were able to eliminate a severe flooding problem that we have where we would flood out. I think we probably would have flooded out this year, this last month, if we hadn't been able to do these improvements. And we had able to centralize our offices to one location to maximize our warehouse space. In total, we had saved 47 jobs that probably would have been eliminated if it had not been for this program. We're a family wage employer. Our average wage is $24 per hour. We were also able to save an additional 8 Oregon jobs at another company in rural Oregon that manufactures artist paint materials for us, exclusively for us. they would have failed, certainly, or had to sell their business to an out-of-state company and exported their, had their product manufactured either in the South or in China. We've been able to save jobs that would not have been possible without this program. I can't say enough about this program, and I can't say the I can't underestimate the impact that it's had on our business. And with that, I'll close my testimony.
Wonderful. Thank you for that real-world example. Yes, sir. Welcome.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Tony Hill. I'm also a CPA, so you have two bean counters here. I'm not sure if that's dangerous or not. But at any rate, I work with Advantage Dental, a dental care organization headquartered in Redmond. Our primary line of business is providing oral health care to the Medicaid population of Oregon. And back in late 2013 and 14, we began forecasting what we felt was going to be the impact on our company of the impending implementation of the Affordable Care Act and the expanded population that would be coming on board with that. And we determined that we, at that particular time, didn't have the capacity within the dental clinics that we currently had to be able to handle what we thought was going to be the additional lives that would be coming on board. And so we began looking at financing mechanisms to expand our network and our clinic base so that we could take on those lives. Those lives predominantly were located in rural Oregon, where it's more difficult for those folks to get to a dentist. And as we experimented or took a look at the traditional financing mechanisms, our company is somewhat unique in that we're owned by about 325 individual dentists, none of which have really a major vested interest in the company. Each of them have a small portion. And as traditional financing typically goes, they require that the owners personally guarantee a loan, and none of the owners, because of their small interest, were willing to step up and personally guarantee those loans. And so we began looking at other alternative financing mechanisms. We became aware of the new market tax credit structure. After a lot of education and looking around, we determined that we might be a good candidate for that program. As a result of that, we were able to combine a federal transaction along with a state transaction, and we were able to, with the dollars that were generated from those transactions, able to buy, acquire nine sites throughout rural Oregon. And since you all have had certain conversation regarding rural, I thought I'd just give you the locations of those: John Day, Canyonville, Sutherland, Milton Freewater, Albany, Lebanon, Lapine, and on the south coast in Harbor. So they were truly rural sites that those folks typically, again, would not have easy access to dental care in those regions. And so we were able to, with the dollars that were generated from that, none of the nine sites were existing dental clinics. And in some cases, we bought the only building that was available in town. And we were able to then generate some additional employment opportunities for the construction industry in those towns because we had to remodel each one of those facilities. It took us about a year to get completed with all of those facilities, but once they were up in place, each one of our clinics on average employ 7 to 8 employees of various skill levels, obviously a dentist, one or two dental hygienists, dental assistants, and then the other office staff that goes along with that. They're high-paying jobs. We tried our best to be able to hire within the communities that we put the clinics in. Where that wasn't available, then, of course, we had to bring in outside folks who then became working, productive citizens of those communities. In addition to those jobs that we created, really the bigger impact I think that had on Oregon as a whole, at the end of 2014, we had 195,000 Medicaid lives that we provided oral health care to. After adding these nine clinics, actually March of 2016 was when we hit our highest level of enrollment, but we went from 195,000 lives to 342,000 lives. And although it wasn't all because of those nine clinics, that was a significant impact on us being able to take care of that particular population.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Any specific questions for this panel? Thank you for giving us an additional insight into some of the ways that these tax credits are used to support development of facilities. And we'll invite forward now Jody Weiser and Marsha Kelly. And then after that, we have Dave Altman, Reynold Reeder, Alan Pasternak, and Niccolo Pinoli. We don't have very much time, so to the extent folks can keep their remarks within about 2 minutes each, that would be ideal, but please let us know what's on your mind. I can stay a few minutes late, and perhaps a couple other committee members can also. Welcome, Ms. Weiser.
Thank you. I'm Jody Weiser, speaking for Tax Fairness Oregon. We just want to point out that in the 2015 session, this tax credit was up for evaluation, and a decision was made to not continue it. So you're being asked to review a decision that was made 2 years ago during the normal review cycle. So if you looked at the report that Chris Allenack did in the last session, you would see on pages 65 to 71 his evaluation of the program and his look at evaluation at the federal program. There's really not been much, there's not much done on the state programs. There's been some work done on federal new market tax credit programs looking at whether this is the right investment of public money. The cost in the bill today is $24 million a year. That's a lot of allocation of federal, of state funds. That's enough for a day of school. It's 2.5 times what Representative Kotek was talking about this morning. So you really do have to look at whether this is the way you want funds to be spent. There is no research that we could find that has shown that it has increased the new market tax credit allocations that are coming from the federal government to Oregon because we have a state program. We're actually one of the states getting more funding than most before we had a state program, and we've retained that position. Further, the new sunset date is 2023. We've been writing legislation so that things sunset in even number years so that they're reviewed during the normal review cycle. And so were you to extend the sunset, it would be best to extend it to an even numbered year. But we urge you to let the low-income community qualified equity investment program or the New Market Tax Credit program be at rest as the last legislature decided. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Kelly.
Marsha Kelly, speaking for the Oregon Women's Rights Coalition. I echo Ms. Weiser's comments about the $24 million a year. I've spent a lot of time on the new market tax credits trying to avoid it being enacted in 2011 and did not succeed. Thought that it had gone away. We hear about the warm and fuzzy neighborhood house and social service projects. We don't hear about the Walgreens of the world using this tax credit to expand. And given the fact that they're the world's largest drug company, it's questionable to me that they would have a hard time getting financing to build clinics in places. But this is a very, very generous tax credit. The last GAO report that I could find in 2014 talked about the generous tax credit and the IRS not giving current guidance on overusing the credit. You can get up to a 24% return on investment, which is a bit above market rates. It's a very complicated funding source. I'm glad that there's something in there to limit fees, because on one of the projects in Oregon, the fees were $726,000. There is information published on the Transparency website that sort of looks to the complications of these bills, and then if you start delving in, you find that folks who are using this credit not only have their company name, in some instances they have a qualified set up in order to utilize the credit themselves, and then they have a leverage company. So before you go ahead and just decide this is the best thing since sliced bread, you really need to look into the details, who's making the money on it, and how it's really being used. I can't say that I totally agree with Mr. Campbell's qualification that 40% of the projects are in rural areas. I counted 12 or 13 based out of rural areas out of 34 in the 2015 report.
Okay, thank you so much. Any questions for this panel? All right, we sure appreciate your input. All right, so we have two more panels of two individuals, and I'm going to invite you to decide which panel it is most urgent to bring up first. If you have any specific response to some of the comments just made, we have a panel consisting of Dave Altman and Reynold Reeder, and we have a panel consisting of Alan Pasternak and Niccolo Pinoli. And we have about 7 minutes before people may need to depart. I'm happy to stay for an extra 5 minutes, but we're definitely at that time of the morning. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, for consideration of reauthorizing the program. My name is David Altman. I grew up in Oregon, run a small consulting practice representing only projects, mainly nonprofits, with transactions that nationally include new market tax credits. My current clients, just to give you an idea, Serendipity Center, a nonprofit school for special needs in Portland, REACH, a job training and supportive services nonprofit for disabled adults in Klamath Falls, renovation of a historic hotel for the city of Redmond, Sabin CDC, a neighborhood development nonprofit providing affordable housing for historically African-American communities, Northwest Housing Alternatives. You've already heard testimony from their executive director. Of the 37 projects that received Oregon New Market Tax Credits previously, my company managed seven of those, and they were in 14 cities. None of them were in Portland, by the way. Hillsboro, John Day, Junction City, Eugene, Lapine, Milton Freewater, Sutherland, Canyonville, Brookings, Lebanon, Coos Bay, Albany, Beaverton, and Ontario. So I will talk a little bit about Fry Foods, since that was brought up. That was one of the projects. This project so far has generated 81 jobs, as is seen on the website. We'll say that the projection is for 300 jobs, and that was what we originally planned. But currently, it appears it's going to create about 600 jobs because they're going to add additional ones. We were in competition as a state with Idaho for this facility to attract a family business, 75-year-old family business that would relocate here. We would not have been able to do it without the state credits. It wouldn't have happened. And that's true for all those projects I can mention. So what does this actually do when you have a small amount of credit? It secures the federal credits that I've talked about, and those are 60% above what the yield is for the state credits. You attract commercial and nonprofit lenders, as you've already heard, that wouldn't have even been interested in these projects without new markets. You also increase the competition for investors, and that happened with this program. We had investors that were not investors previously that came because of the program. You also augment the fundraising efforts for these institutions, especially the nonprofits, with their capital campaigns. The new market tax credits actually leverage that. And you improve the financial solvency, as you've heard, of both the for-profit and nonprofit entities. So I would encourage you to think about how important this is and realize that in the next biennial budget, this has no impact other than positive impact, because most of the economic impact is in the first couple years of the program. So I'd be willing to answer any questions if anybody has any questions.
Thank you. Mr. Reeder.
Yeah, my name is, for the record, my name is Reynold Reeder. I have a company called Reeder & Company, and our offices are out of Cedar Mill near Beaverton. I've submitted written testimony, so I'm going to just hit some highlights to be brief, or as brief as I can. I just wanted to point out that the state program has outperformed the federal program. The federal program has an 18% rural requirement, and we've hit 46%. We have the numbers to back that up. Happy to share that with people. I would mention that the Oregon New Market Tax Credit is the only tax credit that we have that targets the low-income community, especially jobs and economic opportunities in those most disadvantaged communities in which we have in the state. We mainly consult with the CDEs. In the past $200 million, we were consultants on half of that. So currently, we have, and this is just what we have a $347 million pipeline, of which 38% are rural, 62% are urban. One of those is in the Ontario District Renewal District, or that you guys were talking about. The client says that there's $12 million in annual economic activity due to that project coming online. And then I guess I'd just like to point out that, you know, it's demonstrated that it's nimble and responsive to small businesses' needs for patient and flexible capital. The Oregon New Market Tax Program is good for business. It's good for housing. It's been a catalytic force in Oregon's low-income communities throughout the state. I'd also mention that the law as it's written has a requirement that the projects be owner-occupied. That sort of definition is there to keep the really big businesses like Walmart and such out of these sorts of programs. So I know that was a concern raised earlier. So that's all I have. If you have any questions, please feel free to ask.
Thanks so much. I know that you came forward to this Committee on Small Business Growth.
Correct.
In the interim, and so we've had a chance, at least Representative Gomberg and I have had a chance to learn a little bit about the work that you do, but I sure appreciate your input. And in the spirit of trying to make sure, I don't see any questions right now, so in the spirit of trying to make sure everyone gets a chance to talk, we will thank you for coming today and invite forward Alan Pasternak and Niccolo Pinoli. And I invite you to correct the pronunciation of your name as appropriate. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for letting me be here. My name is Alan Pasternak, for the record, and I am an attorney in Portland. And I represent Qualic Bees, or project sponsors, in connection with these projects. I, too, have submitted some written testimony, so in the interest of being brief, I'm not going to read that to you. What I would like to do is just highlight a couple of things that I mentioned in that testimony, projects that I have worked on or am working on. One is the Community Transitional School in Portland. CTS, as they're called, bounced from one church basement to another church basement for well over 20 years before building their own facility. CTS is a school for homeless children. They send their buses out every morning to go pick up the kids wherever they are, whether it's a shelter, a parking lot, somewhere, and they're able to adapt quickly to when the kids move. What CTS provides for these children is the anchor that a home provides for other children. When they did that grand opening, I went to the ribbon cutting ceremony and I was met at the door of the school by a young lady, probably fifth or sixth grade, who said to me, "Would you like a tour of my new school?" The pride in her voice took my breath away. I happened to arrive at the same time as another attorney who worked on the project, very senior partner from a major Washington, D.C. law firm, and you could just see the tears well up in his eyes. That is what we do with New Markets Tax Credits. We work with organizations like CTS that give people hope and pride, and you can't undervalue that. Another project I'm working on now, Dave Altman's also working on, is with Serendipity Center in Portland. Serendipity is also a school. They're actually a therapeutic school. They provide education and mental health therapy services also to kids. They serve kids from 20 different school districts. And the way they work is they tailor their therapeutic services and education to the needs of the specific kid. Now, I can speak very passionately about Serendipity. I actually was the one who introduced them to New Markets Tax Credits. My son is a graduate of Serendipity after nearly being expelled from high school. He has been diagnosed with autism, obsessive compulsive disorder, and Tourette's syndrome. Without Serendipity, he would not have finished school. Serendipity serves kids from over 20 school districts, and they are bursting at the seams. We've been working with them to try to finance the development of a new school that would allow them to double the number of students that they serve.
We've gotten some interest from federal CDEs, but absent the state program, that project either won't go forward, or if it does go forward, it will be much smaller than it otherwise would have been.
So, Mr. Pasternak, I want to just explain to you what's happening, because no one is leaving because of the really lovely testimony
it's time, you're providing.
The committee dismisses at quarter till, and a lot of people set up meetings, you know, every
seven minutes
or 10 minutes starting when they get out of committee. So those are really helpful examples. Do you have additional things that you want to say, or should we transition to Mr. Pinoli?
I'd like to let Niccolo go, but if I can have one second.
Please.
The Walgreens project that was mentioned, I worked on that. I've worked on most of the Oregon State deals. That did not allow an expansion of Walgreens business. That allowed the preservation of, I think, 11 stores that Walgreens had scheduled to close. And they were going to close, and the reason they kept those stores open was because we were able to help them finance doing some rehab on those stores and trying to work with them to make them financially viable. So it was not an expansion. We helped save stores in low-income communities that would have otherwise gone away.
Okay.
So thank you.
That's
helpful. I appreciate
context. Mr. Pinoli, welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee that are still with us, my name is Niccolo Pinoli. I'm a partner in the Portland, Oregon office of Novogradac & Company. We're a CPA firm who represents clients who are working with tax credits like the Oregon State New Markets Tax Credit. You know, there's something really magical about the New Markets Tax Credit that maybe only finance people really fully understand, and that's the ability of the credit not just to provide dollars to a project, but the place in the capital stack where it resides is really quite powerful, because it takes the most risky part of the capital stack that is usually the most difficult part of the capital stack to find and the most expensive when you can find it, and provides that capital for a very, very low cost. And that's what brings other sources of capital into these deals and allows these deals to move forward. I want to talk about two deals specifically today. Madam Chair, one of them is in your district. That's a neighborhood house Head Start facility, part of the Stevens Creek Crossing facility. They have a pre-K program that serves about 200 kids within that low-income housing project and created about 20 jobs. So that's one deal that is really incredible. Another one is actually in Representative Smith's district at the confluence of the Sixes and Dickey River, which has to do with the Coquille Indian tribe. And they were able to acquire 3,200 acres that used to be part of their tribal lands. And now they're able to sustainably manage that area and have it open and available to their tribal members for activities within the tribe, as well as hunting and fishing and management of that area that without this program, they would not be able to do. I know it's great to talk about finance, but bringing it home to you and your districts and what happens there, I think makes it even more powerful. And we hope you support the program. Thanks.
That's great. That's I really appreciate you providing some specific examples of things that we know well, because it is, you know, it's construction financing is complicated and abstract. So that really helps put a face on the need for it. Before I close the hearing and adjourn, I want to note that this bill is not ready to work today because we're awaiting amendments to allow it to be used in the affordable housing context. But this was a good introduction, and I appreciate your being here to share with us the value of the tool. With that, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2155. Thank everyone for being here, and adjourn the meeting.
Thank you.
I thank everyone for being here, and adjourn the